If you're listening to this via an avatar of some sort, maybe somebody has set you up a voodoo doll. Don't assume that they're up to no good. It may be perfectly legitimate. You may have consented to having a voodoo doll made of you. Maybe you're getting old and you're not as mobile and you wanted to experience the world via a voodoo doll over which you have control. Now, how that works exactly, I don't know, but let's assume for the moment that voodoo dolls are a thing and that they work. And perhaps you're holding the voodoo doll in your lap, manipulating it. You're bending its leg and then your own leg is bending as a result. Or you're bending the voodoo right hand around the voodoo doll's right leg, and that's causing your own hand to bend around your own right leg. Which is a problem, because then your hand is no longer manipulating the doll, it's manipulating your leg. So you've stopped controlling the doll. How does that work? That's going to get you in some sort of a vicious circle that you can't get out of. No, you don't want to do that. If you have a voodoo doll that you're using to manipulate your own body by manipulating the parts of the voodoo doll that correspond to your body, you need to think that through before you do it. Let's say you've an itchy back, so you decide, I'll scratch the back of the voodoo doll. Well, that'll cause your own back to get scratched, but it's being scratched by your own hand. So your own hand, if you're scratching the back of the voodoo doll with your right hand, that means you take the hand of the voodoo doll and you use the hand to scratch the back of the voodoo doll, which causes your right hand to scratch your own back. But you're using your right hand. Oh yes, use your left hand to manipulate the doll. To manipulate the doll's right hand to scratch its own back. And that will cause your right hand to scratch your own back. Now make sure you're sitting down and not leaning over or anything, because you might lose your balance if you're not careful, because you'll be busy doing all this stuff to the doll with your left hand. And your own hand will be kind of out of control, but not really. Because the things that you manipulate the voodoo doll to do will cause your right hand to apparently lift itself up of its own accord and reach around and scratch your back. There's a good chance you could lose your balance if you're not careful and topple over. You don't want to do that. I had that happen to me last week. Not exactly that scenario. There was no voodoo dolls involved. Nothing like that. I was walking across my kitchen. And I slipped, dropped a large pot containing a small amount of boiling water and some eggs. Dropped them on the floor and then I landed flat on the floor. It wasn't a voodoo doll. I presume it wasn't anyway. If you're a listener to this podcast and you caused me to have that accident, then you have some explaining. Well, you don't really have some explaining to do. I know what happened. You don't need to tell me what happened. I know what happened. What happened is I landed flat on the ground. I had a sore rib for about 5 days. I'm still a bit sore. So it's fine. I'll live. But don't do that. Don't be using your voodoo doll to cause me to have accidents. Don't do that. And not that I'm alleging that you did. I'm just assuming that someone did. I'm not going to do that to myself. I don't have voodoo dolls. If I did, I wouldn't have one of myself and manipulate it to cause me to have a painful accident. No. I just spent 5 minutes trying to find a word for a thing that I used to think existed. There was a thing that people used to do that was something to do with insurance, risk assessing or something. It had some weird name and people would say, I'm going to go and do this in college. You'd hear, oh, you have to be a genius at maths for that. You have to be very, 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 very intelligent. They'd be the cream of the crop of the maths world and they'd spent 8 years in college studying to be a something beginning with A, I think it was. Can't find the word at all. I looked all over the internet. I looked from one end of the internet to the other. I even looked up on those things where you look up, what's another word for? Well, that's hard to do if you don't have another word for it. You have to have another word for the thing that you're trying to remember if you want to do that. So I'd have to go, what's another word? I tried another word for insurance assessor Now, that got me nowhere. So that's not a thing. So there's a good chance that by the time I finish editing this and putting it up, I still won't have the word. So you'll be left wondering, what is he referring to? Well, I'm referring to that thing that apparently doesn't exist anymore. It's like the Mandela effect of career opportunities. I'm sure it existed when I was in school. People would talk about going to do something beginning with A in college for 3 or 4 years, and then I'll be a maths person who has something to do with risk assessment or something like that. No sign of it anywhere. No sign of it, just as there's no sign of Nelson Mandela. The Mandela effect is an alleged phenomenon whereby when Nelson Mandela died, a load of people went, wait, I remember him dying before 10 or 15 years ago. It was a big deal. I remember that. People came up with theories about how there must have been some change in the timeline. Maybe the world had some huge disaster and we shifted away from that timeline and got to another one. And in the other one, Nelson Mandela wasn't dead yet. So we still had that to look forward to, apparently, if that's what they meant. I know there was that. I know this thing I'm trying to think. It's not accurist. No. Something beginning with A. Think of it, you fucker. I'm talking to me, not you. Don't worry. Brain. Think, O'Carroll. Think. What in the name of Christ is a word? Acupuncture? No. Accurist. Assessor? No. Actuary. Actuary. I'm going to look up what that is now. If an insurance actuary performs risk assessments for insurance policies. I looked up those things. It told me all about insurance assessors, but didn't say anything about it being actuary. You arseholes. Actuary. That's what it is. It's actuary. Rhymes with factory, which probably annoys a lot of people. People whose sons train as actuaries to go to actuary college. And then people go around saying, oh, what's your son doing now? I hear he's in a factory. That probably drives the parents nuts. They'll have to say, no, he's doing actuary. Nothing to do with factory. I know it rhymes with factory, but it's actuary. And then people probably go, oh, that's great. So does he go around to visit factories? Is he like an inspector or a foreman or something? And he goes around to assess the factories and say, no, it's actuary. There's no F in actuary. There's an F in what I'm going to say to you next, but there isn't one in actuary. And my son is doing actuary, not factory. And then, of course, they go too far in that direction and then they have to say, not that there's anything wrong with working in a factory. I know your son works in a factory. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't mean that. Just trying to be accurate though. My son spent 18 years doing actuary in college and then he spent 5 years as a junior actuaryist working 24-hour shifts as a resident actuaryist at the local actuary clinic. And then he became a proper full-time actuaryist now. Now, I don't know what it entails, but it's not a factory. And then the other people say, of course, well, we don't know what it entails. Maybe it does involve factories. Why is it so important to you that we don't think your son does anything involving factories? In fact, he probably does something involving factories. I mean, it's actuaries and then there's factories. Factories may well be a branch of actuaries. Maybe there's factories and factories and hactories and yactories. Factories may be one branch of that stemming out from actuaries. And if that's the case, I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of. I know you're a bit of a snob. You wanted your son to be a doctor or a lawyer or an actuaryist, whatever that is. But there's nothing wrong with factory either. Your son could be a factory. We wouldn't look down on you. There's nothing wrong with being a factory. Now, was your son a factory or not? And say, I don't know what he is. He does actuary. I like that he does something that I don't know what it is, because that means it's important and complicated. If it's factory, then I know what a factory is. But if it's actuary, I don't know what it is. It's like you haven't chosen the first consonant yet. So it's actuary. I suppose it could, in theory, be factory, but it's not. It could be gactory or hactory or pactory or nactory. Mightn't even be a letter in front of actuary. It might be a number. It might be 5 actuary or 6 actuary or maybe even Roman numerals. Now that could get complicated. It was XI actuary, 11 actuary. That was the Z actuary. I suppose they'd probably say, oh, wait, is that the Is that the president of China or something? Xi-octory, I don't know. Tend to be Vactory. Is that the Roman numeral 5 or the letter 5? What is it? Anyway, that's actuaries for you. We remembered the word and that's what's important.
Into your head.
Look at your hand right now. Take out your right hand and look at it. Look at all the joints in it. Let's count the joints in our hand. There is a point to this. Let's count them together. I'm starting at my little finger. I'm looking at the palm of my hand and I'm counting the joints. Now there's 1, 2 in my little finger. To the next finger, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The thumb, that's at least 1. I didn't count the joints at the end of the finger, so what's that? Is that 3 joints for each finger? Well, let's say there's 3. So that's 3 fours is 12, and then you've 2 in the thumb, that's 14. I suppose. Yeah. Anyway, try folding your hand down in half now. You can't really. You can only fold it. You'll see what I mean when you try to do it. Try folding your hand towards you, folding it like you're folding an envelope over. It doesn't close. You end up with kind of a diagonal. It's more like if you try to, if this was origami and you're trying to fold your hand into a rectangular shape, it wouldn't work. You get kind of a diagonal thing. Kind of, at best, you'd fold it into a paper hat of some sort. And that's not very satisfactory. You get like it's because of your different lengths of your fingers. You end up with this, I suppose it looks like a sloped roof or something. What use is that? And then you have your thumb sticking up there like a sore thumb. I suppose that could be a chimney. But why would your hand need a chimney? I suppose if it's very sweaty, they hold the sweat out. I live in one of those countries where everyone doesn't have air conditioning in every room in the house and in everything we go into. So I presume if you have air conditioning, does that let the sweat out somewhere? Does that evaporate into the air and then go out through some sort of a chimney that's connected to the air conditioning system? Or you just get rid of it in one of your 8 showers a day that you Americans like to have? You Americans like to have 8 showers a day. But you have these air conditioning systems. Do they not draw the sweat out? Because otherwise, what's the point? You might as well just be sitting in a house full of asbestos. You have a whole air conditioning system for your building, but you're telling me it doesn't draw the sweat away from your body and send it out up to a chimney or down to a drain somewhere, extract it from the air. That's no use to you. The minute you're born, your parents put you in this nappy thing that's designed to draw all the sweat and muck and dirt away from your skin. You see an ad for nappies on the television, the first thing they'll tell you is that, oh, this has a layer that's designed to draw stuff away from your skin. It draws the moisture away from your skin. Now you've got these air conditioning systems that they don't even let the sweat out. They don't draw the sweat away from your skin and pump it out through a chimney. Well, that's of no use to anyone. If I was in a country where we needed air conditioning and they sold you an air conditioning system and they said, oh, this will get rid of everything except the moisture that's on your skin all day, it's probably killing you. It's probably giving you pneumonia. I'd say no. That's a waste of money. That's a con. You're being conned and duped into these things. You probably have salespersons coming to your house all day. They can see that you don't have an air conditioning system because they walk past your house, they look up. In America, the way you tell whether someone has an air conditioning system is if there's a thing, you look up at their upstairs window and if there's a big, huge box leaning out the window that looks like it could fall on someone's head at any moment. If they don't have one of those, that means their house isn't equipped for the weather. I remember the first time I saw those things. I went to America. My sibling was living in these houses that were made from wood. You have these hurricanes and you have houses made from wood and you open the window and you jam a big machine into the space between the window frame and the open window. And that does something to the air. But it also looks like it could fall down on anyone's head at any moment. Walking along a footpath in a residential area in Boston in the 1990s was one of the most terrifying things I ever did in my life. How it was explained to me, or else are you assumed that there's something that counterbalances those air conditioning so they don't fall out of the window and onto your head? But I don't know. I don't know. That just looked like nonsense to me. It's a big brick. Because you have that some sort of... That's what you have, Bobby. Instead of a gun to protect my house, I'm going to have this big thing sticking out the window that's ready to drop on anyone's head at a moment's notice if there's trouble. So you put that up there and you tell us it's air conditioning. And we may as well operate as an air conditioning system, boy. You might as well have a landmine on your front path. So that's what you Americans do. I think it's actually quite clever. But you have all these houses, they're made of wood. You have these doors that have three layers to them. You go up to a door in a house in America. You have this thing. One of them is there to keep the spiders out. And the next layer is, I don't know, is that to keep the air out or something. And then the next layer is to keep people out or in. And then there's a fourth layer that's probably a child gate or something. And then you've a fifth layer that's for, I don't know, that's where you put your newspapers. You'd put your newspapers. You have children coming along delivering all your children, according to your situation comedies anyway, all your children get paper rounds when they're 8 years of age. They get up for school. School in America starts at about 6 in the morning, from what I understand. See, they get up at 4 in the morning and they do their paper round on their bicycle. And their paper round involves throwing a newspaper. You cycle along the middle of the road and you're throwing newspapers into the front garden of each house from your bicycle. And you're expected to be paid for that. That's nonsense. Do you not? You have letterboxes. Put it in the fucking letterbox. Or better still, put it in between one of the... Between the doors. You should have a door that's... Christ. Don't let me explain to you how to use doors here, because I don't want to... I feel bad telling you Americans how to run your lives. You have to make your own choices. I see all you doing all this. You have these new... I suppose it's probably too late to explain to you how to deliver newspapers since they're going out of fashion now and they're all electronic. But no, you have if you're going to have several layers of doors at your front door, you just have them open the outside one and put the newspaper in there. And then you could lay it flat between two of the layers of door, maybe between the spider, the anti-spider layer. And the anti-hurricane layer. You put the newspaper there, you don't even have to bend it or fold it then. You keep it entirely flat. There was talking about the hand. You look at your hand and you see there's about 12 joints in it. But if you try to do origami with your hand and you fold it over, the best you can do is fold your fingers over. Your thumb is sticking up like a sore thumb. All thumbs stick up like that. I don't know why people say it's a sore thumb. You stick it up to prevent it from becoming sore. Don't wait until you have a sore thumb to start positioning it properly. Position it properly first. I wonder, is there a general hobby podcast? Each week, here's a thing you might want to do with your life. Now, there's a lot of hobbies that people can have. If they're going to cover one every week, and you still haven't made up your mind after you've been listening for a year or two. Time is ticking away. At some point, you have to just pick something. You can't just wait until something comes up and slaps you in the face and says, I'm your hobby. Here you go. You finally found me after 8 years. No, you've lost 8 years then. That's not acceptable. The average life for our species is something like 70 or 80 or 90 years. You can't spend 30 years of it figuring out what you're going to do with your spare time. You've already spent the first 20 years training to what you're going to do with your not spare time. Perhaps learning to type, or learning how to build a wall, or learning how to go to Mars on a rocket ship eventually at some point if we ever get around to it, or learning how to spout nonsense on the television. or learning how to operate on someone's brain, or learning how to stitch up someone's head after someone else has operated on their brain, or learning how to stitch up someone's head after someone else has damaged their head and not for the purpose of operating on their brain. You might want to check their brain before you do that, incidentally. If someone comes to you with a head wound and they say, no, I'm not here for the brain surgery and I haven't had brain surgery, my head got opened by someone illegitimately, don't just go and stitch that up. Ask a brain surgeon or some sort of consultant to check their brain. They don't want to stitch it up and then find that there's something wrong with their brain and then you have to go back in and open them up again. That's a lot of trauma for the flesh to go through. You may even have to slice the top of the skull off to access the brain then. Even if there's... I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, how did they damage the brain without opening the skull? Well, you can rattle your brain around in your head. Someone can hit you and your brain rattles around in your head and gets damaged by the inside of your skull. That's what happens and it's very, very dangerous. So be aware of that. If you're involved in fixing people's heads and you think, this is great, I just have to stitch this head up. I don't have to know anything about brains or anything. I'm just doing the stitchy part, the sewing part. I don't have to worry about the inner workings. Yes, you do have to worry about the inner workings. You do. You don't have to know about the inner workings, but you have to worry about them and you should, well, not necessarily worry, just do your due diligence by consulting someone, saying, wait, does this fella look like he has anything wrong with his brain that needs to be dealt with before I stitch him up? And don't say it like that, though, because you say, I'm stitching him up. That sounds like you're deceiving someone or doing something to them. That sounds like you're committing a fraud upon them. It's a stitch up, a con. That's not, no, don't say it like that. Unless, of course, you're in some other country where stitching someone up doesn't have an alternative meaning like that. I suppose there's that. How do you get into stitching people? In the early years of primary school, we were taught knitting. We got into that for a while. It's quite a difficult thing, I found. I could do the basic process of knitting, basic knitting movements. But before you start and after you finish, you have to get someone who's good at it to do this thing called casting on and casting off. They start the first row, they get you going. You have a row set up on a needle and then you just knit there by doing your little over, under, in and out. That's what shoe tying's all about, except it's for the knitting. It's very like that though. You have two needles. You push one up into a loop that goes under the other one. Then you put a thread around and then you push the left thing up and under your thumb and over a bit in a practice movement. Oh, it's like learning to touch type. But then when you get to the end, when you find you're finished knitting, you can't just stop. There's a process that has to be done called casting off. And most of us mere mortals, when we were 6 or 7 or 8 in school, never learned how to cast off and never learned how to cast on. I think it's because the teacher liked having some control over us. She liked saying, oh, you have the power to make your own garments, but only I have the power to start you off in the process and start you off on the process. It's like in Russia or somewhere where, well, maybe not Russia, I don't know, where someone controls the channels of distribution. If you can control the casting on and casting off of the stitches on the needles, then no matter how much you teach people how to knit, they're still relying on you. You control both ends of the means of distribution. So you're basically an oligarch. These primary school teachers who were teaching us to knit, but not how to cast on and cast off, they were like oligarchs. They weren't paid very well, admittedly. Maybe that's why you had to do this. Maybe they had some sort of long-term plan for their retirement. I don't know. Maybe they thought, if these kids, if they don't end up emigrating somewhere, eventually they're going to be part of some underground knitting network and all control of. Now, if that's, it's really what you want teaching your children maths. Maybe it is. I don't know. That's the problem, of course. You see, in primary schools in this country, teachers have to know a bit of every subject. They don't specialise. You have to know maths and you have to be able to add and talk and knit and teach religion and teach Irish and tell you about hedgehogs and hamsters. They call that nature. And a bit of geography maybe, or a bit about the dinosaurs or this mythical fella in Irish mythology. I think it was Fionn MacCool and the Salmon of Knowledge. He caught the Salmon of Knowledge. When you eat the Salmon of Knowledge, you become very clever or something. So he caught the Salmon of Knowledge and his assistant was there frying it up for him. But his assistant got splashed by a bit of oil or something. He licked his finger, which means he was the first person to ingest any part of the content of that Salmon of Knowledge. So he got all the knowledge. Fionn MacCool ended up being quite a big deal. And that's what they used to teach us as history in school. It was kind of halfway between history and religion, I suppose. I don't know. These teachers have to know a bit of everything. So they have to know a bit of how to knit. So they learn how to control the on and off ramp of the production process. I suppose it's I don't know. Now I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, what would be the advantage to controlling the means of production on a thing that some 8-year-old could knit? Well, that's a good question. You're asking the wrong person. Because whoever's there who can hear you, are you even saying it out loud? You're probably not. So the only person who's hearing it is yourself. So you're asking yourself a question. Does that make sense? It's like drinking your own piss. No, don't ask yourself a question. That's just wasting electricity. You're wasting calories talking to yourself, asking yourself a question that if you could answer it, you wouldn't need to ask it. Not just you're going to get stuck in your... There's this book I read, Douglas Orr, Stop Heckler or Stop Getter or something like that. It's called I Am a Strange Loop, his theory about how the mind works. You're looking at a camera and you're on the camera and you're looking at the television or something. It's hard to explain. Because I haven't read it in about 2 years. Didn't really make any sense to me anyway. These people think the human mind is a figment of the imagination. We've conned ourselves into thinking we exist. We're playing an elaborate trick on ourselves. You're born and the minute you come out, someone goes, oh, look, there's a great exciting world out here, but it's not real. Look over there for a minute. And you look over there for a minute. And next thing you know, you're 78 and you're on your deathbed. That's what life was like, according to these people. These consciousness theorists, they say, oh, you think you're alive and you think you're a person and you think you have a brain and a mind and you think you're able to think. But it's all an elaborate con that you're playing upon yourself. You won't even admit it because you're dishonest. That's why I know it's a con. You're dishonest enough to con yourself into that. And why you do, I don't know. Maybe just to pass the time while you wait for the onset of death. You pop out at 9 months old. I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, wait, you're 9 months old. Yes, you're 9 months old when you're born. You pop out at 9 months old. And because you're 9 months old, you've already got somewhat of a functioning brain. You've got somewhat of a functioning limbs. You can move a bit. You are alive. And then you think, Christ, look at me. Look at me. I'm here. I'm hearing this, whatever this is. This is clearly all fake. I mean, this is clearly all fake. I mean, look at it. Look at it. There's all these men going around in white coats. There's these lights in the ceiling. There's all these people going around obsessively cleaning everything. There's people looking at me and waving soft toys at me. Not that there. First thing that happened to me on about my first day on this planet, they hand me a fake stuffed animal. That's the first thing they do. For their first impression of the world is to be giving a fraud. I say, look, this world you're coming into for the next 7 or 8 decades, it's all an elaborate scam. And here was your first clue. Look at this bear. This is a bear. I expect you to believe this is a bear. I expect you to believe firstly that this is a bear, but also that it's your friend and that it's there to comfort you. About 10 years later, they'll tell you that a bear is a terrifying animal and you need to stay away from it unless it's in a zoo, or unless you're in a zoo and the bear is on the outside, in which case stay in the zoo until someone comes along and sorts it out. I suppose you could be in a zoo within a zoo. Could you have that? Could it be like, you know, they have these aquariums in some places where you can go. They have a kind of a corridor that's inside the aquarium in a glass tunnel, so you can walk through under the water and see the fishes. I suppose you could have a bear thing like that in a zoo, a cage within a cage. You'll be in the cage and the bear will be in the outer cage, and then the outside world will be outside of that cage. You'd get into the inner cage via a tunnel. Well, what would that achieve? I don't know. You get the feeling of being, you get somewhat of the experience of feeling what it would be like to be trapped by bears in a zoo. But not really, because you can see that the bears are confined in the outer cage. It was not really like that. It's the nearest you can get to it, though. It's all a fraud. All a fake and a fraud. And that's what you realise the minute you come into this world. Everything around you, you have these fake bears. You have this artificial cleanliness of this hospital that you're in. They're going around cleaning the air. Because God forbid you should be exposed to air at your delicate age. And I suppose that's reasonable. That's why we don't all die in childbirth. Especially the children. There's children used to die in childbirth and they weren't even giving birth. They were just being born. Once upon a time, there was a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the street one day, minding his own. Oh, I did that live, incidentally. I didn't go and do that in editing. I did that whole thing live. I just went, oh, I'll turn this into a song. I don't like that thing I did a few weeks ago where later on I came back and edited the dog thing. That kind of Queen style, Bohemian Rhapsody style chorus. I multiplied myself. I did 3 or 4 tracks of myself saying dog simultaneously. That was a bit artificial, I thought, even though it was fun, but artificial. No, what I did just now, that was live. I did that live and spontaneously. I was doing it more out of guilt than anything else, because I was doing this dog thing and I realised, I felt bad, not for the listener, for myself, because I've already recorded a couple of segments that started with the dog thing. And later on, when I try to assemble some sort of show out of this, I'm going to find that there's too many dog things. And I'm going to have to find some way to use them all without bringing too many dog segments, because I don't want more than one dog segment in an episode. So I'm being unkind to myself by doing too many dog segments. And I was thinking that as I was starting this, I was going, once upon a time there was a dog. Oh, wait a minute. This is a bit unkind. I have to be considerate towards the me of later today who's going to be editing this. So I thought I'll do something interesting. So I think you'll find I did do something interesting. I think I'll find I did something interesting too. Mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, this dog. He was walking along the street one day, minding his own business. Well, he thought he was walking along the street. In actual fact, He was walking along the roof of one of these underground buses, which I alluded to earlier in this program. One of these underground buses, they go along in a trench. You have a sail sticking up out of the top of them to catch the wind and to make them visible. But the bulk of the bus's body is under the ground in a trench. It's driving along the bottom of a trench. The dog has no idea about this. The dog thinks he's just walking along a street, happily minding his own business. He may as well be on a stationary treadmill. You see a lot of videos nowadays of cats on treadmills. They're walking along a treadmill and they're keeping up with it. And some of them seem to even enjoy it. Or else they're just doing it out of compulsion. We like to say these cats are enjoying things. They're really not. It's a compulsion. It's like you see someone with OCD who's going through a door and brushes against the left of the frame, then the right frame, then brushes against the left frame, then the right frame another 4 times, and then another 12 times to make it up to 4 times 4. And you think they're enjoying that. They're not enjoying that. It's a compulsion. They're miserable doing it. Don't assume that because a cat is walking along a treadmill and forcing itself to do so that it's enjoying itself. No, it's a compulsion. The cat is probably miserable. He's probably thinking, if I stop this now, my whole family will get wiped out in a nuclear bomb tomorrow and I'll be left homeless. He's doing it out of compulsion. So don't be thinking that these animals on treadmills are... Well, except the dog. The dog is a dog, so he's just walking along the roof of this bus thinking it's a normal pavement and he doesn't even know what's going on. And just by pure chance, he's going at the right speed so that he doesn't fall off the edge. Wait a minute, does that make sense? Walking along the top of the bus going at the right... No, he'd have to be stationary to not fall off, because if he keeps walking, he's going to eventually reach the front of the bus. That makes no sense at all, does it? Maybe, oh no, could be walking from the front of the bus along the roof towards the back. Could that work? I don't know. No, I don't think that. That doesn't make any sense, does it? Does it make sense to you? Probably not. It doesn't make any sense to me. But at least we got the song out of it, so that's good. If you're listening to this in the upper saloon of a bus, a city bus, perhaps the type that goes around Dublin or London or other parts of the world where you have double-decker buses. You Americans don't seem to have double-decker city buses. You have these single-deck buses. Well, maybe they have basements. I had a dream once about a bus having a basement. It was a Dublin city bus where you get on and there was a stairs going downstairs into a basement. And I don't mean some sort of luggage compartment or engine area under the floor. No, there was a proper basement. Instead of an upstairs, you go down the stairs and there's a basement. Now, the way I imagine that being possible is if there's some sort of, perhaps a little like the way they put tram lines in a lot of cities. In where the tram lines, they could dig a groove into that and you'd have space for the bus to have an underbelly that sticks into the groove in the ground, so it's a basement underground. It'll be a little bit narrower than the main part of the bus, because they would have to fit between the wheels. The wheels would have to be on the ground, so the trench would be dug in the space just between the wheels. It'd be a trench. That's where you put the belly of the bus, so it would have a basement. Now, what purpose that would serve, I don't know. Maybe just to have a low profile. Or people like myself who are sensitive to daylight. I'm sensitive to daylight. I have difficulty seeing in daylight. There are times when it might be quite useful for me to be in the basement of a bus, as long as they had proper announcements, reliable, telling me where we are, or if there was internet so I could follow it on maps. There'd have to be internet in that basement. That would be a problem. Would a bus with a basement have internet? I don't know. We don't have much experience of underground public transport here. Anyway, that's how an underground bus would work. Did I explain how an underground bus would work? I think I did. Well, I'm saying how I imagine it would manifest itself. I don't know how the technical workings would be. Would it save any energy or anything? I don't know. It may well be more aerodynamic, because if half of the bus is underground, instead of a two-story bus sticking up into the air and facing the wind, that's probably more aerodynamic. Unless you want to put a big sail on the top of the bus. I suppose you could do, that's what you do. You put the whole bus underground, but you put a sail on the top of it, and then we just see a big sail. When it's going with the wind, it can charge up or whatever, it'll have used wind battery. Then instead of seeing these ugly buses, these double-decker buses, or these ugly buses with basements, you just see a joint sail going along. It'll make it very easy as well. I find it difficult to see buses coming. They just had a big sail with a massive 20-foot bus number on it. It would say 84A City Centre. Would it be easier to drive? I don't know. But it's going along a groove in the road, I suppose. Little steering involved. It'd be like a tram. What's steerage? Is that a different thing? That's something to do with boats. Boats have steerage. Is that different from steering? Steering and steerage. I don't know. Do you know? You probably don't. Well, neither do I. And why would you expect me to know? You've never even heard of the concept until now. And neither have I. So how would either of us know? Yes, I'm expected to keep talking about it as if I know. Just figure it out as I go along and put it out here and fill it up. Bring this concept to life. Do you want me to build a prototype as well? No. This is theatre of the mind. Construct it in your mind using the pictures I've painted you. Make yourself comfortable. You're sitting there, you've probably got your earphones on, have you? You probably have. Have your wireless earphones. Have you got those earphones where there's no wires at all and you just put one in each ear and each of them costs €300 per ear, and if you lose one, you might as well just go to the poorhouse for the rest of your life. Why are you doing that? What is wrong with you? I use Bluetooth earphones all the time. I don't use the ones that don't have any wire at all. That's ridiculous. I have the type that are joined by a single piece of cable. I loop the cable to the label on the back of my t-shirt. And if the label on the back of my t-shirt doesn't have a hole in it, I make a hole. If it has the type of label that loops around, then I put it through the loop. So the label is holding the cable in place at the back of my t-shirt. Or if there's just a single layer of label, I punch a hole in that. Or else sometimes I get a short piece of shoelace and I make a hook from that. I attach it to the inside of the back of my t-shirt. That's how you take care of a pair of cordless earphones. You don't get one that has no cord at all. That's ridiculous. You don't get two things that you put in your ear. The minute they fall out, you might as well just give up and pack your whole life away. You're never going to own anything again if that happens. Why would you do that? If you're doing that, you might as well be just living in Las Vegas and putting your wages directly onto a Russian roulette table and saying, spin the wheel. If it lands on black, I'm dead. If it lands on red, I'm dead. If it lands over there, I have to amble away my left cordless earphone, which incidentally you have to charge separately. Each of your earphones, if you use those, has a separate charger, and you can't even plug it in the same room because you have so many wireless accoutrements that you have to have a separate room for each charging station. I know you think you have one of these all-in-one wireless chargers. No, that's not a thing. But it is a thing. You put this thing on your wireless charger and you go, oh, just going to put that there. The magnet will mind it for me. Until I'm ready to put it back in my ear and go out into the world like a fucking lunatic. What is wrong with you? Have you always been a risk taker like that? Those things only came out about a decade ago. Before that, there wasn't anything in the modern world that you could do that was that risky. Maybe walk along the train track. But even then, you're going to hear the train coming and get out of the way, hopefully. You're walking along a footpath with a wireless earphone in your ear and another wireless earphone in the other ear and a wireless telephone in your pocket beaming stuff to each ear and a wireless charger in the sole of your foot or somewhere. You beam electricity up to, you probably have. Now that I think about it, I haven't been in any of these young people clothes shops. I'm sure there are pre-wired garments now. You have pre-wired homes now where they have cabling put in everywhere for your speakers and things. I'm sure you have the same with garments. Of course, you put them in the washing machine, then you short-circuit the whole town. And then you wonder why there's no electricity. It's because you've short-circuited the whole town with your accoutrements. Don't do that. I know I've just told you to do that, but I didn't tell you to short-circuit the whole town. Don't go from one extreme to the other. Get the garments with the wires and all that, but don't overdo it. You don't have to take every new thing and run with it until it causes a huge catastrophe. Exercise some control over yourself. If you're listening to this from outside the door of this room, perhaps you're one of my cats who have been temporarily banished from the spare room. You've been temporarily denied access to this room because it's where I go to record. Perhaps you're listening there. Just remember, there'll be a better version of this available online later. Listening through the door is less than optimum. In fact, you're not even hearing the raw recording. You're hearing me through a door. You're not even listening to the raw recording. And you wouldn't even want to listen to the raw recording because it hasn't been through any of the processing yet. Doesn't sound good at all. So if you're a cat listening to this from outside the door, you're getting a very, very, very sub-optimum view of this audio. A version that I would never dream of publishing. And you're just listening to it there and you're judging it. And I think that's unfair to both of us. It's like if I was Leonardo da Vinci and I was drawing The Last Supper, but I hadn't even coloured in all the faces yet or decided who was going to be the Jesus and who was going to be the disciples or what they were going to be doing or what expressions they were going to have on their faces or what the menu was going to be. And you're there looking at this. It's just barely a sketch. And you're saying, oh, this looks like shit. Well, of course it looks like shit. It's not ready yet. So if you're listening to this through a door and you're a cat, in fact, you're probably not even listening. Are you even capable of listening to content like this? I don't think you are. I know you can hear noises from in here, but you're probably thinking, oh, I wonder what that is. Is that a toy I should be chasing? Is that someone calling me saying there's food? I don't even know what that is. Imagine if that was what everyone thought listening to this. If the version of this show I put out was what you hear through a door as a cat from outside in the hall. Might as well be buying a bootleg of this podcast on O'Connell Bridge. Not that there's anything wrong with bootleg CDs. Well, apart from the fact that they're illegal and you're a criminal scum if you're partaking in that. You're supporting an illegal industry. You're supporting the illegal recording of illegal music onto an illegal format and sold through illegal distribution channels. You're an evil, 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 evil man if you're doing that. Or woman. But apart from that, no, there's nothing wrong with bootlegging. Is there a bootlegging thing that involves alcohol? I think that's to do with your American prohibition, is it? You Americans had this thing called prohibition, and it's a bit like your driving licenses. You hear about these Americans on the television and they say, oh, do you have your license yet? I got my license. Here's your license. Here's your license. I have a license. They never say what the license is for. We're supposed to just know that it's a driving license to drive a vehicle. It's not a television license or a fishing license or a liquor selling license. No, you're supposed to just know it's a driving license. And you do the same thing with your prohibition. You said, oh, we had an era of prohibition. You go, oh, that sounds interesting. What was that? Just a general prohibition. But you just had a prohibition on everything. Everything was prohibited. Like walking on the grass or something. It's like that Star Trek episode, Star Trek The Next Generation. A young Wesley Crusher on this planet where everyone seems very nice and he's playing with the local children and it all seems like a very paradise-like planet. He accidentally runs onto the grass to fetch the ball or something and he promptly gets arrested and sentenced to death. Is that what you mean by prohibition? And you'll say no. And then I'll say, well, perhaps you should make it less vague then, because that's what prohibition means. If you just say prohibition, everything is prohibited. Is it so illegal that you're not even allowed to say what the subject of the prohibition order is? That thing whose name shall not be spoken is prohibited. So we just say prohibition. And then presumably all the tourists come along and they say, we don't know what's prohibited. And they say, that's okay. We're prohibited from selling you the thing that's prohibited. So it's not likely that you'll accidentally come across it. Unless you're going to some sort of bootleggers or something, and then you might as well be just going to a drug dealer. Because if you go to a drug dealer, you know exactly what you're doing. So presumably if you go to an illegal drink seller, is that what a bootlegger was? I don't know. But if you go to one of them, presumably you at least know that you're getting something from a bootleg. I presume it's the it used to be smuggling in the leg of a boot. Is that what it was? I hope you're confident in the state of your feet cleanliness if you're doing that, or else it's well sealed. It's going to get rather moist and warm down there. Do you really want to keep a beverage down there? Well, obviously you don't. You've little choice. In the era of prohibition, when you're prohibited from everything, it's not allowed. So that's prohibition for you. If you're listening to this on your morning newspaper round, you're probably some American child, are you? If you're on a bicycle, actually, now that I think about it, if you're a child in America and you're on a bicycle, that means you're not even old enough to have been given a car by your parents yet to drive to school. And we all know from our situation comedies and dramas that in America, children learn to drive at age 8. And they're promised by their parents promised to give them a car when they pass their driving test, which you do at age 11. And then for the rest of their high school, they're driving to school. So if you're doing a paper round as a child in America on a bicycle, you must be one hell of a loser. Were you held back or something? Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense, does it? Does that make sense? Well, you don't know because you haven't heard what I was going to say. So let's keep it that way. Anyway, if you're one of these children in America going around on your bicycle delivering newspapers, what are you delivering? Are you delivering The Onion? You probably are. They brought back the print edition of The Onion recently, I hear. I used to buy copies of it in Boston out of one of those newspaper vending machines. You have these newspaper vending machines in America for people who don't want their newspaper delivered by children on tricycles, because they've seen that movie, that Stephen King movie where there's the twins going around on tricycles and they're absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. So they don't want children coming along on bicycles delivering their newspapers, especially if they're throwing them at their houses, as you apparently do over there. Your children go around with rolled up newspapers and you just throw them in the general direction of your house. And then you come out in your dressing gown and you pick up the newspaper. Occasionally you'll shake a fist at them and say, why are you late? This newspaper is late. What is wrong with you? I need my newspaper at 6:20 a.m. I have a paper route too. My paper route involves getting up out of bed, going into my ensuite toilet and having a piss. And then my route goes down the stairs, then over to the front door, where I open the front door and expect to find my newspaper. Ideally, have the newspaper gently thrown at me just as I open the door so that it lands in my hand. Why would you want your newspaper delivered to your house? That's fucking ridiculous. If you're important enough to need to know what's in the news and have it delivered to you, then you're important enough to need to go out. You probably need to go out very early. And you can get a newspaper in one of those vending machine boxes. If you've never been to America, these fucking America, these Americans, on every corner in the cities, they have these newspaper vending machines. And they're designed to look like televisions. There's a newspaper in the door, in the glass, and you see the top half of the front page. And it's behind a glass window, so it looks like you're reading the news on the television. And then you put a coin in and you open up the door. And because Americans are all very trustworthy, you open up the door in this thing and it doesn't dispense one newspaper in return for a coin. You put in the coin and it lets you open the door, and they trust you to just take one copy of the newspaper. Anyway, they had machines selling the Onion, the print version of the Onion. And the print version of the Onion, they have the joke man in the street interview section, where they show quotes from fictional people in the street about commenting on the news. On the online version, you get three different people commenting on the news. In the print version, they get four. So you get an extra joke in your printed version. So it's very good value. It's very good value. I remember bringing it down and reading it in Boston Common with the ducks, with the weird ducks. I'm not just saying they're weird just because ducks are weird, even though they are. Ducks are weird. But no, the ducks particularly disturbed me. Because you used to go down there with a salad from the local supermarket salad bar, had hard-boiled eggs in it. And if I spilt a bit of egg, one of those ducks would come up and eat it. They're basically cannibals. They're cannibals. It was just really grossed me out. I'd be sitting there listening to Howard Stern on the radio or Rush Limbaugh if it was later in the day and there was nothing else on. And I'd be listening to that. This is one of my first impressions of life in America. Sitting in Harvard Square, listening to Rush fucking Limbaugh. I hadn't realised. I didn't know a lot about him then. I just thought he was just this interesting, fun fella with a fun voice on the radio. These were innocent times, so I'd be listening to that. And this duck would come up just right in front of me, start eating the crumbs of a chicken embryo that I'd spilled, eat that off the grass. I found that very disturbing. It weirded me out. It weirded me out. And even though lots of cousins and one of my siblings have settled down in America, I've stayed here. I've not emigrated to America. I think that might be one of the reasons why. Those ducks. Anyway, good morning.